TG Geeks, episode 69, April 18th, 2016. We do love independent films and their makers. Thank the maker. Hello, and welcome to another webcast from TGGeeks.com, where Ben and Keith, the two gay geeks, talk about all aspects of geekdom and nerdery. Sci-fi, comics, film, horror genre, you name it, we talk about it. I'm Keith Lane, and we are coming to you from TG Squared Studios in lovely Phoenix, Arizona.
And I'm Ben Ragginton, but I'm coming to you from the alternate reality of Pueblo Caliente, Arizona.
Yeah, anybody that knows us knows what that's all about. We have a really exciting interview with you for you today, and we're just going to jump right into it. And this week, we have another independent filmmaker with us, Russ Emanuel, and his new film, Occupants. Welcome, Russ, to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about Russ Emanuel. You are the director of this film. I assume you did production and et cetera. So tell us about you and about this film.
Well, my name is Russ Emanuel, and I am the director of Occupants, the film that's currently, in the Comic-Con and Film Festival circuit. This is my fourth feature film. I've been working very closely with my producer, Howard Nash, on all of the films, and also with actor Robert Picardo of Star Trek Voyager. He was in all of my feature films. So basically, I started my career, well, I don't know, do you want me to go way, way back?
Oh, you can tell us whatever you want to tell us.
Okay, well, I grew up on the music of John Williams. Composer John Williams, who did like Star Wars and Superman. And
never heard of those.
We're old. We remember Star Wars when it first came out.
I remember when he was Johnny Williams and he wrote the music for Lost in Space.
Exactly.
That's right. He was Johnny Williams. Yeah. Jazz player.
Yeah.
Jazz pianist. Johnny Williams became John Williams. And from what my parents have told me, I watched Superman over and over again. And I think part of it was his iconic score. When I mean Superman, I don't mean Man of Steel.
No, Superman the movie.
Exactly.
Yes, the 1978 version.
The only Superman movie.
Well, it's a great film.
It's my favorite movie.
And you can just hear the first few notes from John Williams' theme. And then you know immediately it's Superman. So I think it really influenced me. And you know, when I was like in my, I guess, teens or preteens, I built Lego sets and I did stop motion my old video camera. This is before digital. So I made like, Lego shoebox sets. And then I just did some, it's little home videos. And then when I was in, high school in Japan, I was born in San Francisco, but I moved around between the two countries, Japan and the United States, as I was growing up. So between 8th and 12th grade, I went to an international high school in Japan called Canadian Academy. And for our last year, our senior project, we had to do something that took the whole year, the whole school year.
Oh, my gosh.
Took time, effort, and money. So what I did was I created a Star Trek episode.
Oh, wow.
In retrospect, it's not very good, in my opinion, but they seem to have liked it. Remember, I was 17 years old. So, and, you know, it had a kind of a premiere at our school auditorium. And I remember we built sets. I pretty much modeled it after Deep Space Nine. And I actually got the outfit from Voyager, which is, ironically, Picardo's character. Robert Picardo's character, the doctor, he was wearing, was like blue and black.
Right.
And so I bought one of those and I bought one for engineering, which is like yellow. And I still have them, by the way. I still use them for like Halloween conventions.
Cool.
They hold up after 21 years. It's amazing. we did this like film, you know, it's like, I don't know how long was it? Maybe like 20 minutes, 25 minutes. And it took the whole school year and I, you know, edited it together, had a debut and actually sold some VHS copies. That's how old, you know, I am. I was selling VHS.
But you're talking to a couple of old farts. We remember.
Super 8.
Yes.
Yeah. I am proud to say, well, sort of, that I have every episode of The Next Generation on VHS.
So do I.
Yeah.
I know. Now I see why. But, you know, back then I was like, yes, I completed it.
I recorded them off the air. I've got the entire series. Yep. So I relate.
Yeah, well, I grew up on Star Trek. That's another influence, by the way.
That's
but
cool.
Anyway, that's what I did. I did this school project, and then it got me into the USC Cinema School.
Wow.
So, you know, I was at USC, the University of Southern California, for 5 years. I studied abroad for 1 year. Then after I graduated, I took some UCLA extension courses. So I do love UCLA. Well, only not in football. Other than that, I love UCLA. And that's where I met my my future editor and cinematographer, my you know, my friend and I guess my partner, business partner, Emil Harris.
Oh, cool.
And we made two short films. One's called Her Night, and then the one that really got us accolades, including San Diego Comic-Con, was Girl with Gun.
Wow.
And that was the one. It was like maybe a 15-minute short film. It's about a female vigilante, I guess, kind of like Elektra. And you know, we were able to get in a lot of film festivals, and again, San Diego Comic-Con was like the cherry, you know, the icing on the cake. And I met a producer around the time that we, you know, were going to the Comic-Con in 2004, and his name again was Howard Nash. And it was just a chance meeting. Anyway, I sent him the film. He liked it. He had a project. He already had John Hurd, the Home Alone dad, attached to it.
Wow.
It's called PJ. And he said, "You could raise if you raise the other half of the funding, you can direct the film." And I was able to find the other half. So I'm 29 years old, and I was able to direct my first feature film. Because John Hurd was attached, we were able to get Robert Picardo, Vincent Pastore, Glynis O'Connor, Halle Keith Eisenberg. Just it was a star-studded cast.
Wow.
And we shot this maybe December 2006, and I remember I was so nervous. And, you know, it was my first feature film, and I'm directing these actors. And, you know, I put 150% of, you know, my energy into it, because I knew that a lot of people would love this chance, and I wasn't going to, I was going to succeed. You know what I mean? That was my mentality.
Wow.
You must have done.
I remember the only.
I was going to say, you must have done really well, because some of those people have come back in later projects that you've worked on. I mean, John Hurd, you've had him return. Robert Picardo has been in almost everything you've done since.
Yeah, he has. And I'm really happy with Bob and John. I just hope they feel the same.
Well, that's good. That is pretty cool.
No, it was, you know, I the way I am, I pre-plan. I'm down to the T. I would have like plan B, plan C, just in case. So I make sure that I cover as many bases as possible. Yeah, and at the same time, I love film. I was telling you, especially music. I just love music, you know? I was working with a composer. His name was Neil Argo. We worked for first several feature films, and he gave me a wonderful score for PJ. It was the orchestra. We actually used the Hollywood Orchestra for that film.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
And it was a dream come true. So for me, you know, I just gave it my all, because this is something I love. I just love it so much, you know, and I just wanted it to be the best film possible. I remember the best shot was we had John Hurt and Glynis O'Connor, and it was a magic hour shot where it was the background was a view of Manhattan. We shot in Manhattan in Brooklyn. So across the bay, or you know, the river, was southern Manhattan. So we got that view during magic hour.
Wow.
And it was such a beautiful shot. I mean, to shoot in New York was incredible. My first two features were shot in New York. So yeah, I mean, I remember the 2 days off I had were Christmas and New Year's. Those were the only 2 days.
Wow.
And those 2 days You know what I was doing? Laundry.
I'm sure.
But
lots
but,
of
you know,
it.
I would not trade that experience for anything. It was a dream come true.
Wow. So tell us, how did Occupants come about? Were you approached?
How did that land in your lap?
Yeah.
Howard. It was Howard. Howard, he options a lot of scripts. He met a screenwriter named Julia Camera. Julia is a member of the Writers Guild of America. And this was back in January 2014. He signed a contract with her. Basically, he optioned the script in February. And because I worked with Howard on all my feature films, you know, I was pretty much already assigned to the project. But I just loved the script because it was a psychological piece. And right. For me, because I grew up in two different cultures, I'm all about dichotomy, about right. conflict, because sometimes there's a culture clash. Well, within my characters, like occupants, in this case, it's symbolized by the fact that there is two versions of them.
Right.
And so you get to see that conflict going on. And I just thought it was brilliant. You know, you have two main characters and one location, and it was easier to shoot, basically, than, you know, a lot of other films. But at the same time, it was a very intelligent script. So I knew I had to do it.
Right.
So what happened was, Howard optioned the script from Julia. You know, we had some, conference calls. We met up and everything just to make sure that the script was the best possible for shooting. You know, we needed it to be a shooting script, right?
Right.
And, you know, I work closely with my cast and crew. I like doing that. It's like a collaboration for me. So, you know, I think of us as family. I think everybody's ideas are good ideas, you know, and then you work together and you collaborate, and I think you can make a better film. So, you know, we were working on the script, and it was around that time that I think I saw that the new, was it Veronica Mars film? Was
yeah.
funded on Kickstarter?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So crowdfunding, I think, got into it, what was it, like 3 years ago, 4 years ago?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, Veronica Mars was about 4 years ago.
And I was thinking, you know, why don't we try crowdfunding? Because, again, this is a film that has, what, two main characters in one location, interior.
Right.
So it can be shot for cheap and still look good. I mean, this was like a dream come true for anybody who, you know, who had more of a meager budget, and that's what we were aiming for. And at the same time, making it still look good. I was thinking, you know, maybe we could try crowdfunding because, again, it wasn't as much to raise as, let's say, my previous films. And so we did that. We tried Indiegogo, and luckily we were able to succeed. We got 106% of our budget.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Of course, now I'm doing that for the comic book tie-in. We're still running that campaign, but that's another story. But at this point, this is like maybe August or July of 2014, so a couple months after we optioned the script, right? And it was apparent by August that we were going to raise the money. So we were officially in pre-production, and we started shooting the last week of September to the first week of October. We shot for 10 consecutive days. So what we ended up doing is we needed a really good actress, right? So we held an audition, and we auditioned 24 actresses, I think.
Wow.
Over 2 days.
Wow, that's amazing.
And we already had our leading actor. He was attached earlier on. His name is Michael Pugliese. But we needed somebody, his counterpart, to be somebody incredible, because it's basically a story about the female character in the
right.
film, Annie Curtis. It's her film. She is the main character. So 24 actresses, and we found one, Brianna White, and she was brilliant. And I remember the DP was there, Emil Harris. Michael was there. I was there. And I needed all of them there because, you know, I wanted to know from the DP, is she photogenic? I wanted to know from Michael, can you relate to her? Because you're going to be husband and wife.
Right. And they had pretty good chemistry, actually.
Hmm?
They actually had pretty good chemistry on screen. So
it was, well, I hope so.
Yeah, it was.
Well, yeah, and he's like, Russ, it's her. It's her. And I'm like, yeah, I think so too. And, you know, I called her up. I said, would you like to part? And, you know, she said yes. And we're able to, you know, cast her. And I remember it was 1 week before we started shooting. So I told them, Michael and her, just, you know, just hang out over the weekend. Just get to know each other. Get to know each other's nuances. Because you're going to be a married couple. And I want it to be natural, you know, and very familiar. And that's what they did. Now, the thing about for them, the challenge was they played two characters.
Right.
So they had to be the real version and the parallel version. So here's what we did. When we shot the film again over 10 consecutive days, which we started, I think, like September 25th or 26th of 2014, we started with the real version where she had blonde hair and he had a facial hair.
Right.
Basically, a majority of the film takes place in the real universe.
Right.
So for the first 7 days, we shot with the real versions. I know for actors, you see, there was an option where we can go back and forth between the real and the parallel. But for an actor, that's really hard, you know, because you're basically playing two different characters, right?
Right, right.
I was talking with my first AD, Clifford Brakefield, really great guy. And we were able to schedule it that the first 7 days were just them in the real universe. And we were able to shoot all 7 days, including, of course, Picardo. Robert Picardo came in on day four. He was shot in front of a green screen, but we shot him in the house, too.
Oh, cool.
And our main actors were there, too, because I wanted the performance to be as natural as possible.
Right.
So
oh, good.
He was working with them. And Bob is very incredible. He's very malleable. He likes to, you know, help out the other actors. So they were rehearsing together while he was in makeup. And if you look at our behind-the-scenes videos, you'll see this. So anybody who wants the Blu-ray, I'm telling you right now, you'll be able to see this. But, yeah, he was able to, you know, they were able to work together for about 20, 30 minutes while he was getting ready. So when we did his scenes, we did his scenes first. You know, it became very natural. And then a day after that, they did their portion of it because they were talking via webcam, quote unquote.
Right.
So it wasn't like they were interacting live in the same room. But basically, they were able to prep by being there on set and, you know, understanding the nuances of what he was doing. So then hopefully when you see their scenes together, it's natural.
It was.
And it feels like they're talking together.
Yeah, it was great.
Okay. So we did that. That was day four. And then on day seven, I called a wrap for real Annie and real Neil Curtis because, you know, as I guess they're more like method. So then they wrap their real versions and then they, you know, they psychologically become their parallel versions. What we had to do for her, she had to dye her hair and it took about, I think, 4 hours. And then for him, we took him to the barber and he was like shaving off his 3 month buzz.
Right.
And then they became their parallel selves. And the parallel selves, honestly, I think for them, they had more fun playing the parallel selves because they were dark and brooding.
Yeah.
And, you know, for actors, they seem to like that.
Yeah.
So, and that was just 3 days. And it seems to have been a lot easier for them to play the parallel versions. And then we got it done. You know, we got all the shots. And I'm telling you, I was so happy. There's some money shots, and I can't exactly spoil it, but
right.
Let's just say I was a very, very happy camper when we were done shooting, and we finished on, like, October 3rd of 2014. I guess, long story short, does that answer your question?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, actually.
It does.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah.
So, of course, since you have mentioned Robert Picardo and that he's been in virtually every one of your films, he must really enjoy working with you and independent films, I suppose.
He seems to be very supportive of independent films. I think he's grown accustomed to our, and when I say our, I mean Howard and I, he's grown accustomed to how we work. And so there's a rapport because I know how he works and he knows how we work. And it seems we click and it's efficient.
Well, that's good.
And I think he likes that.
Yeah.
We like it because
we
know what he can offer and we know how long it'll take. And
exactly.
You know, then we move on.
And it brings a name to your films as well.
Of course he knows that. It helps a lot, especially with the Comic Cons.
Exactly.
Because he is an actor from Star Trek Voyager, that is. And And when I approach Comic-Cons, of course, I will say, you know, we have Mr. Picardo in our film. Would you be willing to, you know, screen it or have a panel or have a booth? And, you know, some of them say no and some of them have said yes, including Phoenix Comic-Con, yeah. Florida SuperCon, and in a couple of weeks I'm going to the Rafticon in Athens, Ohio.
Cool.
So I've been very grateful.
Speaking of Phoenix Comic-Con, they're going to show that during the film festival. Do you know exactly when or what time have they given that to you yet, or have
not
they
yet.
Haven't gotten into the planning? So we'll publish that in a later article.
As soon as we know,
as you know, let us know so that we can start hyping that and making sure that everybody here in Phoenix knows when that is, and we'll certainly take care of that for you.
Now, go ahead.
I do know that Comic-Con is June 2nd through 5th. That
right.
much I do know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, we'll be there. Now, going back to the film, and again, we want to stay away from spoilers. And I don't know if this is a question you can possibly answer, but given the nature of the production, how you've got our characters in the real world, how you filmed all of them, and then you've got their doppelgangers in the other world filming that, what kind of challenges did you have to face to try and create some kind of what would end up being a rather linear story?
This is a very interesting film. I guess just to give us a brief synopsis, it's about a young couple named Annie and Neil Curtis. She's a documentarian. They set up cameras all over the house to do this reverse supersize me kind of raw vegan detox diet. And while they're doing that diet, they're inadvertently film a parallel version of themselves living in the same house, but it's a darker version. So basically, that's what the story is about. And Picardo's character plays this doctor who acts as a mentor, and he deals with paranormal phenomena. So he's trying to guide them into what to do. And as the film progresses, they are able to send objects through portals, and it gets even more horrific. Because, again, the parallel version of themselves are not very nice characters. That's all I can say. So that's the backstory. But the challenge was, this is a found footage film. In a found footage film, we have, again, cameras set up all over the house, right? But unlike a traditional film where you have a lot of cut points, let's say you can cut from a wide shot to a close-up to an insert to the close-up of the other character to a medium shot. In this film, it's like this one static shot. It's a wide shot of the room, let's say a living room. So if we want to cut, what can we do?
So you have a lot of scenes right? that are single takes.
Yes. Now, we figured out how to cut. It's by glitching to the parallel universe and back.
So that's how you did multiple takes.
Yes, so
exactly.
It wasn't just a story effect. It was a filming technique convenience.
It was definitely very convenient, but again, it worked in our favor because there are scenes later in the film where we subtly put the parallel actress in there for very quick snippets,
right.
like maybe like a couple frames,
right.
and hopefully we use it as a quote-unquote scare tactic. So it, you know, I think it worked. It worked very well. Story-wise, it also worked for editing. And my DP, Emil Harris, he was also our editor. So we had these discussions in pre-production. What can we do? What's the cut point? Now, for actors, again, it's very hard for them because it's just one big wide shot, you know?
Right.
So we had to rehearse. We had to rehearse beforehand. You know, they had to know the, I guess, their surroundings. And they had, and then we had marks for them, you know, like, okay, we start here. And, you know, I don't assign marks. What we do in rehearsals is, you know, they go through it. And they're like, you know, Russ, I think it's more natural if I stand here by the table. Or let's say I sit down. And I said, okay, let's play with that. And then they do a rehearsal. And they're like, oh, you know, maybe if we move here. And then we do another rehearsal. And they're like, okay, this feels very natural. And then I look at my script and I'm going, okay, this fits with the story. Let's do this.
It sounds
so
more
that's
like,
how we were
like,
working.
Sounds more like blocking for the theater.
Yes. Oh, it's very, and that's the thing, because we're this is a film, it's a sound footage film, so you're able to break the fourth wall. You're able to look at the quote-unquote audience, which is the camera. So it's very, very much like theater. This does harken back to the, I guess, the more traditional days of of filmmaking, where it was more like a play,
right?
Versus what it is now today, which is, I guess, more like MTV.
Yeah. Now, previously, I mean, this is our second found footage film.
Yeah. First one was I'm Alone.
And that was by Rob Palmer. But we previously, it was like found footage, oh my God. But the I Am Alone and this film have really changed our minds on found footage, if it's done right. So, you know, I mean, it really makes a difference if you do it right or if you do it badly. But I would say you have done it right. So it's really an interesting take on how our view of found footage has changed over two films, as a matter of fact.
Well, I'm very grateful that you think of our film in a more positive light.
Yeah, it was interesting. I don't want to say too much because we're going to do a review of the film
just
before it comes out here at Comic-Con, but it's changed in my mind, at least.
It was a unique use.
Yes.
That's as far as I will go on saying this, but I've not seen it used in that method before. That's all I'll say.
Oh,
on
thank
that.
You.
Now there was
well,
some, go ahead.
Know,
go ahead, please.
No, I don't want to like when I do a film, I don't want it to be a rehash of what happened before. I like to think outside the box. Try something new. That's what's so exciting about filmmaking.
Yeah.
Well, speaking
and,
of
hopefully I succeeded.
Speaking of thinking outside the box, now there is something that we saw last weekend in Cottonwood at the Comic Expo that just really kind of floored me. And that was this, I guess this is part of a marketing gimmick, but it was this string of testimonials from this
Peterson
Research Institute.
And it was like, whoa, what is this? It really piqued our interest in the film.
That's what got me interested in wanting to see the occupants in the first place, in seeing this film. This is a rather unique idea. I mean, I've heard of people and filmmakers coming up with some sort of, you know, they're really fleshing out their world that the story takes place. But I've not seen this kind of thing done before. I mean, the last time I saw anything like this was Independence Day, where they decided to, you know, filmmakers decided to create a whole swath of international news segments all talking about the invasion of the planet. And I've never seen anything done to that degree until now, seeing this. What was the idea behind creating this, the Peterson Research Institute, and as far as a marketing tool for the movie?
Well, honestly, it was the film Cloverfield.
Mm-hmm.
Cloverfield, if you remember, is another found footage film back in, 2008, I think? And
roughly,
they had a viral marketing gimmick called Slush-O-Cola. Fake Japanese company called Taraguto. And it was so intriguing that it made me watch the film. And if you know now, they have a semi-tie-in sequel. And
right.
Cloverfield Lane came out, last month?
Yeah.
So I just thought that was so intriguing. And that was honestly my inspiration for doing this. And I'm thinking in Julia's original script, it said that she sends a video as Dr. Peterson's character, who runs the Peterson Research Institute. He sends a video to our couple, Annie and Neil Curtis, but it was never described what the video was. So in post-production, which, you know, once we wrapped the film in October, we were in post-production for 13 months. We finished the film in December 2015. So between October 2014 and December 2015, we had some time to think about it. And so what I did was I said, you know what, let's flesh out these videos. You know, supposedly they're seeing all these testimonial videos, right? So let's create these testimonial videos. Let's have people actually shoot them. You know, get somebody who's a representative who could then introduce this video. So we shot his scenes, and his name is Chris Winters, a really good friend of mine. And he became like the son of Dr. Peterson, and he's introducing all these videos. We shot that actually in my parents' house in their garage in April 2015.
Wow.
for the very express fact that he's introducing a kind of like a marketing video by the Peterson Research Institute. At the same time, I talked to my friends. He talked to his friends. I had another friend named Jean-Paul Ouvrier. He talked to his friends, and we all got these videos from all over the world. Literally, we got it from all over the world. You know, Japan, Philippines, Pakistan, France, Spain, Canada, and then we, you know, they all send in these videos. And then I picked the ones that I thought were the best. And then I said, you know, like Cloverfield, let's just do something viral. So we created a fake site, the Peterson Research Institute site. You can actually go to, and if you go to our website, occupantsthemovie.com, you'll see the link to it.
Now, is that video that we saw last weekend, is that available on the Peterson Research Institute, or is it on YouTube, or?
Yeah, you'll see individual videos. That is available. Now, when we actually, you know, create a Blu-ray or a DVD, once we find a distributor, this is going to be something we do give to them, and it will be put onto that as a bonus feature. But individual videos right now can be seen at the Peterson Research Institute site, PRI-research.info,
right.
I think it is. So we have all these videos, right? One of them happened to be, and I assigned case numbers to each one. And the film, by the way, feature film, is case 831, which is actually a take on my birthday, August 31st.
Cute.
Now, case 831 is special. Because case 831 is not only the feature film, but it's when not only do people see parallel universes on their TV screens or radio where it glitches, now they're able to interact. So now this effect is getting worse, and it's international, it's worldwide. So, you know, this could be, you know, open up for like a sequel, let's say.
Oh, cool.
Is this where the comic book tie-in figures in?
Yes, exactly. And that was where I was going. One of the cases, and this is, again, was inadvertence. We were just creating the world as it was going along, right? Now, case 831, the feature film, takes place in Los Angeles. We shot in Los Angeles, just south of the Cedars-Sinai Hospital, north of the 10 Freeway, if you know where that is.
Yeah, we do.
Yep. Middle of Los Angeles. So it's a beautiful house. We found it. It's a very nice, beautiful house. So I'm like, you know what? This is obviously Los Angeles. Let's just say it's Los Angeles. Now, at the very beginning of the film, there's like this kind of like, a, I don't know, a case folder, and you'll see this couple lives in Los Angeles. So I'm going, okay, we have that. That's been established. I have all these videos we shot, and we kind of assigned you know, fictitious names and places for each of the cases. And one of them was my friend, Timothy Lee Conley. We shot at his office at a university. And it's case 285, and we assigned Los Angeles to his case number, right? So I was like looking, and here just as a backstory, my friend Eric Kask is the editor of the comic book, right? Now, he was brought up, he came on to the actual film as an associate producer, and he was the behind the scenes videographer. So he was there pretty much the whole time, right, shooting. And while we were shooting the film over 10 days, he was just, you know, just casually saying, Russ, you know, this is kind of interesting. Maybe you want to do a comic book. And I'm going, oh, okay, sure. Like that, you know, not being very, just being semi-serious at that point. This is in 2014. Well, 1 year later, he brought it up again. He says, Russ, I think you should do a comic book. I'm going, okay, how? He's like, well, you have all these cases. And then maybe we could do something and expand this parallel universe, because you have multiple stories possibilities. And he's like, Russ, I have a friend. His name is Dave Beatty, and he's willing to work with us. And he works for DC and Marvel Comics. He's a really great guy, very professional, what do you call it, artist. And I'm like, you know, this is very intriguing. So I started brainstorming here. I'm going, what can we do? Well, I figured that we can tie in another Los Angeles case, and it turns out it's case 285 of Timothy Lee Conley, and he plays a character named Lee Mitchell. And so I created this story, which takes place during Act 1 and Act 2 of the feature film. And it doesn't give away the feature film, but at the same time, it expands the story. And one reason I was intrigued with this comic book is that we could do something extraordinary, as in, you know, battles and war and whatever not. And we have that in the comic book, something we could not do in the feature film for budgetary constraints.
Right, right.
And so, and he's like, Russ, you have to put an anime in the Japanese because this, we're trying to, you know, get that crowd. So I'm going, okay, what can we do? What can we do? So I don't want to spoil it, but let's say we do involve Japanese, which, you know, I'm half Japanese, by the way. So I'm more than happy to do that. And, you know, we created a parallel universe. And it's completely different from our universe, but it still takes place in Los Angeles in the year 2016. It's just a drastically different Los Angeles. And Eric is the one who is the comic book aficionado. I'm not, right? So he taught me a lot of terms, like a comic book one-shot, and actors in a comic book are not called actors. They're called models. So there's a lot of these terms. Yeah. So he says, you have to create a 24-page story. So I did. We decided that we should do an Indiegogo campaign. Because we already have a successful campaign done for the feature film, right?
Right.
So we already have something to show that we can do it. So we decided, let's just try it. So I shot a video introducing the project, and we put that together, and we launched on February 20th at the it's called Critical Threat Comics, which is a store in, I think, was it Arizona State University?
Yeah, in Tempe.
It's right next to it. In Tempe, yes. So we had the release party, and we needed $4,050. And I am just so grateful, but we are now at 189%.
Whoa!
I saw that.
Yeah.
I was just going to say that.
$7,600. I mean, you don't know how grateful I am. And this really helps with promotion, promoting the comic book and the feature film. But basically, you know, I was looking at this comic book as a possibility of starting a franchise, because we screened a work in progress version of the film at a Star Trek convention a couple months ago called Farpoint.
Right.
And they loved it. I'm telling you, I was just so shocked. They loved it. And I said, would you like to see an Occupants too? And they're like, yes. I'm going, okay, so there might be a possibility. So this comic book is, I guess, the starting point of a possible franchise, you know, and to either a sequel to the film, a feature film, or a web series, or a TV series, or another comic book. I mean, the sky's the limit, because we're dealing with parallel universes.
Right.
You can have infinite stories.
Yeah.
So that's why I was so fascinated by this.
And that Indiegogo campaign is, it says as of the day that we're recording this, which is Saturday, where the episode releases on Monday, so you would have 2 days left. And that's Indiegogo.com, and look up Occupants, and you can find that campaign still going as of publishing time.
As of publishing time for this episode. For anybody who wants to quickly jump on board for this campaign, and just as maybe as an enticement, what kind of little benefits could a person might possibly receive by wanting to, further throw money in your way?
They could have a co-publisher credit for $2,100.
Really?
Yeah. I know somebody wants to jump at that, right?
Exactly. Well, of course I had to run
down
to the
highest priced one. Sure, let me break out my checkbook.
We do have more down-to-earth perks.
Yes, there are.
But why have that? Why not just shoot for the sky, you know?
Yeah. For as little as $5, you can be a part of this Indiegogo campaign.
Well, for $5, you can get a digital copy of the 24-page comic book one-shot, as we call it, the comic book.
Yep.
For $10, you can get a printed one. For $15, you can get both.
Yeah.
Which I guess makes sense. Uh-huh. Plus five.
Yeah, and then there's variant photo cover limited editions and
basically, the variant covers, we're going to have three separate covers. One's already drawn, which is the official cover, and another one's a variant, which we're going to employ another artist. So a different type of style, more anime style, I guess. And we're going to have that drawn once the campaign ends. And then the third one will be the theatrical poster.
Cool.
If you go to our website, occupantsthemovie.com, you can see that. In fact, there is a link to the comic book campaign through the official website too. So that's another way to find our campaign.
Yep,
so that's the variant photo cover for $20. And then you have the art fan pack for $35. And you get the standard alternate and theatrical photo covers. You get the comic book too.
That's pretty cool.
And it keeps going up and up. So
I've got to ask, I have to ask about this because I'm really, really curious now. You've now had two successful crowdfunding campaigns. You were able to exceed the goal for the movie Occupants, and you've just gone gangbusters with the comic book tie-in. Now, there are so many projects. I mean, we've spoken to a lot of independent filmmakers, and a lot of them go through crowdfunding, and many of them don't exactly succeed. I mean, I don't know, maybe you don't know the answer to this, but what, you know, for anybody who wants to maybe fund a film, I mean, obviously you have some kind of formula for doing it right. Was there some kind of marketing campaign that you guys did? What was your outreach so that more people learned about this crowdfunding?
Well, I'll tell you this. First, it's a tie-in to a feature film that has a name actor, Robert Picardo. That helped. It also helped that we have done three other feature films with name actors. They know that we have a, you know, a following, or at least they know who we are. You know, they know we're real.
You have a reputation.
Yeah, we have a reputation. But at the same time, honestly, you have to be like a door-to-door salesman.
Just about.
You just have to be. I apologize to everybody out there, but I am as annoying as heck. And I'm very, you have to be very, very persistent. And I'm telling everybody out there who donated, I will make it up to you. But that's why, that's how we do it. You just have to keep 24/7. You have to keep at it. We use a lot of social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, to get the word out there. Whatever, even if you donate $5, I will thank you publicly if you want to, because it does help. If you know, there's like a mathematical algorithm on Indiegogo. I don't know about Kickstarter, but there is on Indiegogo, and it helps to keep your campaign trending.
Right.
So even a $5 donation, which I don't, it's not a donation, it's a contribution, because you get something back.
Exactly.
Even $5 helps, because it helps with the algorithm. So this is something we learned over two campaigns. You just have to be persistent. It's not easy. It really isn't. But
well,
you can do it. If I can do it, you can do it.
I would say it beats going to a studio and having them fund it, and then it's no longer independent.
It is no longer your film.
It's not your movie anymore. It belongs to the studio. So there's something to be said about being able to crowdfund. And clearly the success of Victoria Mars has proven that, or Veronica Mars, as well as what you've been able to do so far. So for anybody who wants to learn more about what it is that you're working on, if they want to learn more about Occupants, now you've already said what the website is, but could you give that again?
Yes. So if anybody wants to learn about the feature film, about any of our screenings, about what's going to happen in, let's say, the next couple months, or if you want to donate for the next couple days, I think our comic book campaign ends on Wednesday or Tuesday. So you can go to occupantsthemovie.com. So that's occupants, plural, with an S, themovie.com. And everything is there.
And what about you? Do you have a presence on social media, the website, the intertubes? How can people learn more about you and projects that you're working on?
Well, my website's called Russem Productions. That's RUSSEM.com, M as in Mary. Mm-hmm. And you can see my other films that I've done, including Girl with Gun, PJ, Chasing the Green, which is my second feature film that has Jeremy London, Ryan Hurst, and William Devane and Picardo in it. And then The Legends of Messiah, my third feature film with Picardo and John Hurt and Teresa Russell. And then this one, Occupants. So if you want to see what I'm doing, that's my website. Also on the Occupants page, there's links to our YouTube page, our Twitter page, and our Facebook page, which technically are my pages.
Well,
so all the links
are
there.
That is pretty cool.
That's far out.
So, and then obviously the Indiegogo campaign on Indiegogo.com. Look up Occupants for the comic book and for the next couple of days. And you are on Twitter. You've got you said you had the Twitter, yes, on there. So,
yes. It's Russell Emanuel, RUSSELLEMANUEL.
And if I'm correct, Occupants also has a Facebook presence.
Yes, Occupants the movie, I think.
Excellent.
Yeah, cool. So thank you so much, Russ, for being with us today to talk about Occupants and the movie and the comic book and Russ Emanuel himself.
Yes.
Thank you so much for having me. I mean, I'm very grateful that...
It was a pleasure talking to you. Absolutely.
It was our pleasure. Thank you again for being on the show.
Oh, definitely. Thank you so much.
Hi, I'm Patricia Chica, director, producer of Morning After.
And I'm Christian Hotko, writer and actor of Morning After. And you're listening to the Two Gay Geeks podcast.
Oh, yeah.
And that is our birthday music. Here are a few selected birthdays for April 18th through April 24th, 2016. April 18th, David Tennant, Chloe Bennett, James Woods, Rick Moranis, Christian Slater,
Leopold,
and Leopold Stokowski, who was born in 1882.
Fans of Looney Tunes will understand that.
Leopold. April 19th, Hayden Christensen, Tim Curry, and Dick Sargent.
Okay, I should have seen that coming, but I didn't.
April 20th, George Takei. Happy birthday, George. And Andy Serkis, Crispin Glover, and Clint Howard. April 21st, James McAvoy, John Muir, and Elizabeth Alexandra Mary Windsor II, otherwise known as Queen Elizabeth.
Queen Elizabeth, yes.
April 22nd, Peter Frampton, John Waters, Jack Nicholson, and Immanuel Kant was born in 1724. I wonder if that's in Singing in the Rain, if that's what they were referring to. I can't stand him.
No. I got nothing.
I can't stand him.
I got nothing.
I can't.
Round tones.
Immanuel Kant. Get it?
Oh!
Yeah.
Let's move right along.
April 23rd. Lee Majors.
You've been a good boy, Lee.
Yes. Shirley Temple and Max Planck.
I thought it was Max Planck.
Planck. The Planck length.
Yeah.
1858.
Oh, dear God.
And William Shakespeare, 1564. April 24th, Barbara Streisand and Shirley MacLaine. And that should do it for the birthdays this time.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
It's a party and you're invited. I'm Tim Galloway, your host and keeper of the Mouse Castle Lounge. Your weekly dose of news, commentary, and interviews from the world of Disney, served up with your favorite tasty beverage. Drop by and see us at themousecastle.com or just look for the Mouse Castle on Facebook. It's good times and great conversations about the house that Mickey built. By the way, did you know that Walt Disney's favorite drink was a Scotch mist? I'm more of a martini man myself. We'll see you soon at the Mouse Castle Lounge.
Go give a listen to our friends Tim and Anthony over at the Mouse Castle Lounge. And we thank Tim for giving us a shout out on his half hour.
Yeah, the happy half hour. It was a live Facebook little event, and he gave us a big shout out. It was great.
Yeah. And what does that mean?
Well, not epic feedback, thank goodness.
Listener feedback.
Yes. Not epic, but there's still some good stuff here.
Yeah.
Starting with going back to our last episode, episode 68, especially when we had a little chat about the trailer for Rogue One, a Star Wars story. Our good friend, Brian Arkell Weber, he left the message, you know, snicker. As down on the movie to boldly flee as I am these days, long story, I still love the following exchange from said movie. Mara's girl. Many Bothans died to bring us this information. Bennett the Sage. What the hell's a Bothan? Mara's girl. Nobody knows. They're all dead. Ah. Ba-dum-bum. I couldn't help but think about... Yeah, thank you. I was waiting. I couldn't help but think about that when you read Kurt's response to the Rogue One trailer. Speaking of, you gotta laugh at the man babies who are crying about that trailer. It's not the fact that they're flipping their heads over the fact there being a female lead, though that itself is hilarious to watch. I'm referring to when the self-professed gatekeepers of fandom who like to throw their little pop quizzes in your face to try and prove that you're a true fan complain about how the movie is somehow retconning the involvement of the Bothans in stealing the Death Star plans. Apparently, they forgot that it was the second Death Star that many Bothans died to bring the Rebel information about. Rogue One is about the first Death Star. Who's the fake geek now, huh? Laugh out loud. And, Brian, you're right. I actually got to correct a couple of people on that. But yes, you're absolutely right. And then last week, we ran a little story about how they're hiring more people to be a part of Marvel's Iron Fist on Netflix. David Wenham, who played Faramir in the Lord of the Rings movies by Peter Jackson, he's going to be in the film. And we got a response from friend of the show, Hamish Downey. And he simply wrote, "To me, he'll always be the hot guy from the Australian TV series Sea Change." Well, now you got me wanting to watch Sea Change. Yeah. Thanks, Hamish. I'm always looking for new shows to watch. And lastly, we ran a story about the new Doctor Strange trailer. Did you get a chance to watch that? See the trailer?
Yeah.
What'd you think about it?
It was pretty good.
Pretty freaky, ain't it?
Yeah.
Well, that's Kevin Feige has been saying, you know, this one is going to be a real mind bender, which I'm really happy about. And we got a response from friend of the show and member of the Technorama podcast, which you can sometimes see us on, Craig Stepp. And he wrote, "I thought Tilda Swinton looked a little jarring when you first see her. Otherwise, I agree with you. I like the aesthetic they seem to be bringing together." And Scott Linder, good friend, wrote, "Gah, what the hell is it with Benedict Cumberbatch and all his movie poster / trailers having him face away from us? I want to see the costume." I know, I'm really anticipating this movie. Doctor Strange is one of my favorite characters, and Benedict Cumberbatch is one of my favorite actors. Well, Doctor Strange, I think, is my all-time favorite character. So yes, I would love to get a good look, aside from just publicity shots. I really want to see what it's going to look like in the finished film. And that's our feedback.
That's the feedback. That's it for the feedback?
That's it.
That's it?
That's it. I told you it wasn't epic.
Yeah. How about that? We do want to hear from you.
Seriously?
We do.
You know, don't be shy.
Yeah, and if we have epic feedback, we'll do a feedback show.
We'll do a feedback palooza like we've done a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, we do want to hear from you. You are important to us. Let us know what you think of the show, what you think of the articles.
What you think of the interviews?
What do you think of the interviews? Anything, everything.
What do you think about those two gay geeks?
Yeah. We want to hear your feedback. But please remember, be nice. Don't be a
poopy pants.
Yeah, there we go. So that we don't have to edit or delete your feedback. You can find us on as TG Squared Studios on Facebook or TG Geeks Webcast. You can comment our episodes and the articles we publish on the Facebook page. You can go to our webpage, tggeeks.com. You can even comment on our YouTube episodes, and you can receive a shout-out on a future episode. You could also call our listener feedback line, and we'll play your comment on air like we have from Brian as well as Crazy Joe. That number is 469-TG-Geeks. That is 469-844-3357.
Hey, this is Robert Palmer of I'm Alone the Movie.
And Michael Weiss from I Am Alone the Movie.
And you're listening to The Two Gay Geeks.
So we got a couple things we just want to quickly touch on. More Ready Player One excitement.
Yay.
I'm
excited.
I need this movie to come out.
Yeah. We got 2 years, though.
Oh, man, those are going to be two of the longest years of my life. And they've just added someone else to the list. He's an actor named Mark Rylance, and that name may not sound familiar to you. He is quite the working actor. He was in a movie called The Kidnapping of Edgardo Mortara, and the guy's an Academy Award winner, so he's serious business. and he is going to be playing God, basically. He will be James Donovan Holiday.
How about that?
I'm just getting more and more jazzed about this. I'm loving the casting that we've seen so far in this. I don't know what I'm more excited about. Just the fact that Steven Spielberg is doing this film, or Simon Pegg is the great, powerful Og. I don't know. I'm just really horribly excited about this movie. We've got a story on it. This will be in our show notes. Check it out.
Let us know what you think.
Yeah, let us know what you think about this. And for anybody who doesn't know what Ready Player One is, shame on you. Get it. Required reading.
Oh, yes.
Especially if you call yourself a geek.
And especially if you're into pop culture.
If you are
and
really...
And 80s pop culture.
Well...
Big time 80s
pop big culture. Time 80s pop culture, but it's, you know, the little bit of 70s in there as well.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, I would definitely... If you haven't read the book, please, by all means, go ahead and get it. The movie, sadly, though, has been pushed back to March 30th of 2018. It was going to come out... It was going to come out December 2017, but a little-known thing called Star Wars... Episode 8 is coming out at the same time, and Warner's thought, we don't want to compete. So they pushed their Ready Player back.
Well,
it is what it is.
It is.
Yeah. Now, lastly, I want to bring something up. You and I were talking about this the other night. We watched the latest episode of Legends of Tomorrow.
Oh, my Lord.
And we both came to the exact same conclusion that...
More like a concussion.
Well, it sort of felt like it. I mean, we were happy with the episodes, you know, individually speaking, but as a whole, we were noticing a recurring problem, weren't we?
Yeah.
What was that problem?
Nothing happens.
They don't get the upper hand.
Ever.
Never.
And it's like, really? Everything they do is wrong.
Every time is, you know, at the end of one episode, you're hearing Rip says, well, we're going to go to this particular time because that's when Vandal Savage is about to wreak havoc doing this kind of whatever it is. You know, name your Vandal Savage threat of the week. They go there, and do they actually ever make any difference? Well, yeah, but it's never good.
Yeah.
If they do make a difference, it's bad. This last episode, really bad.
Oh, my God, yes.
I was depressed.
Yeah. It's like they never... Wow.
No, and that at the same time, I have to feel like that you're achieving some kind of goal.
Yeah, I mean, you want something every once in a while.
You know, at least with Arrow, as dark as that got... And holy moly, did that get dark. At least we saw them gain, temporarily at least, they got the upper hand. They temporarily defeated Damian Dark. I mean, it was, at least for a short time, it was arms raised in victory.
At least there should be some kind of setbacks anyway.
I mean, and Arrow gave us a great big setback. Mother of all setbacks. But we're not even getting, we're not even getting that kind of a setback.
Yeah.
I mean,
I still like the show, but it was like, oh, my gosh.
I'm enjoying it.
It's wearing me out with that.
I want to see them get the upper hand. I think I said after we watched it, I think what's happened is because Vandal Savage is such a threat and because he can only die in one very, very, very specific sort of way, you just can't keep killing him because that gets stupid.
Yeah.
You know, that would get really old. So you can't beat him that way.
Yeah, don't get me started on that knife, though.
Oh, the knife.
The knife.
Yeah.
The knife.
Yeah. Yeah, that was my pinky in the brain bad joke there. Sorry. I couldn't help it. But yeah, that's sort of my frustration with DC's Legends of Tomorrow. I mean, hopefully, since the show is coming back for a second season,
maybe they'll give us something in the season finale. I assume it'll be a cliffhanger.
Well, actually, I'm under the impression that they will win.
Ah.
Because they're bringing in new cast members, or some new cast members for next season, and the next series, season 2, is supposed to take a completely different turn. It'll have a totally different tone. So I'm left to believe that they will ultimately win at the end of the season. We'll just have to wait and see. So, but, you know, listeners, What are your thoughts about Legends of Tomorrow? So, I mean,
tell us about Legends of Tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean,
I
would say at least 2/3 through the entire series. We're rapidly approaching the finale. What are your thoughts on it? What do you think? Are you happy with the overall progress? We'd like to know what you think about that.
Yeah. Okay, so we've got a few follow-up items, as always. We have a new independent film for you to support. It's coming soon on Indiegogo campaign for Morning After, a new film by Patricia Chico and Christian Hodka. Patricia Chica and Christian Hodko.
I'm so glad I'm not the only one to butcher names.
You can hear the interview at the link above. And please consider supporting an independent film. Also, we got a link up above to the Indiegogo campaign for the comic book for Occupants. So
And when Keith says link above, we're talking show notes.
We're talking in the show notes, absolutely. Also, Phoenix Comic Con. Oh my gosh, they just continue to announce guests. It's amazing how many people.
This is going to be the most.
It's going to be great.
I mean, oh my word, there are too many guests. Too many guests.
And we just got another press release from them that I haven't had a chance to put on the website. But
well, they've got some anime voice actors that are going to be showing up, I believe.
So we're going to get that up there. And regular passes are still available. And they are $60 for the complete Comic-Con until April 30th. Please keep checking phoenixcomiccon.com for updates. And they have announced FanFest 16 will be October 22nd and 23rd in downtown Phoenix at the Convention Center. More information after the June event.
Yes, and we want to give a special shout out to the Doctor Who Fancast Guide because they still are republishing our stories, and we love them for that. They are Doctor Who Talking Who on Twitter, and you can read the Fancast Guide by going to Twitter and following at Talking Who. And same thing with the Arkle Times Post Dispatch News. Yes, that is put together by good friend Brian Weber. He is on Twitter. He is Socius. See, I've just done it. Social Justice Scald. And you can read the Post-Dispatch News by going to Twitter and following at Arkle. And Brian also has the incorrect Star Trek Voyager quotes. It's he gave us a little correction. When we kept talking about how it's not safe for work, it's not like there's anything graphic, but there are some quotes in there which may not be exactly something you want your boss to kind of peer over and say, oh, what are you reading? You're fired. Don't want any of that. And that is on Tumblr, and we'll have the link for that in our show notes.
Yeah. Oh, and while you're talking about that, I think that they use paper.ly.
Yeah, I believe they do, because we have something.
We have one of those, and you can take a look at that, and let us know if it is of interest to you.
We should put the link for that
on
our show notes as
I'm
well.
I'm a little ambivalent about that right now.
Yeah,
so
do you guys like it? Do you not
like
it?
If you don't
let
us know.
I think we are getting some positive reshares and like tweets publicize our little paper Lee.
Yeah. So just let us know about that, as well as check out those items from Arkle and at Talking Who. We also want to give a shout out to The Lucky Show. The twins are wonderful. I love the twins, Shasha and Dagmar.
Yeah.
On Twitter, at Lucky Show, and catch their episodes on YouTube as Lucky Show.
And they are back.
Yes.
Yay!
If you like old movies and campy reviews, this is the show for you.
And puppets.
Yep.
And we want to give a shout out to the Facebook group, The Gay Geek, because they're awesome. And why are they awesome? Well, they're awesome for several reasons. I mean, one, yes, they do allow us to share our posts. But the most awesome reason is because they are filled with awesome people, and there are lots of awesome content that is there. And the reason we get to share our episodes there is because they have an awesome moderator, and his name is Jeremiah Reeves.
Thank you, Jeremiah. Also,
this was a shock.
This was a shock, and this was really a big thing.
This is big for us.
We want to give a big
thank you.
Thank you, thank you, thank you to whoever it was that nominated us for a Parsec Award.
Wow.
What is that, you ask? Grasshopper? Well, They started, the Parsec Awards started a number of years ago for podcasts and are awarded at DragonCon. For more information about the Parsec Awards, go to parsecawards.com. Thank you, whoever nominated us.
Whoever it was who nominated us, we bow.
We are very honored.
Yes.
That we're very honored. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and now comes the hard work. We got to find the right content to send it.
Exactly.
Dadgummit.
If you have any ideas and you listen to the show and you have any ideas of
you know,
of
it's not a bad
content,
thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, let us know. I mean, if you think there's some good segments, I mean, what's the criteria?
Anything you want. Yeah. Whatever's going to win.
Yeah, and anything that you think is a good submission that we can send over to Parsec Awards as good material to hopefully get us the trophy, let us know.
We're limited up to 3 clips and 10 minutes. So
right.
Let us know if there was a segment or something that you thought we should...
That we should send over.
Send over and you thought was incredible.
That's right.
And lastly, we want to say something about our Amazon ads that we've been running. Please consider clicking on the ads. It shows Amazon that we have traffic and we're driving traffic to them. You don't have to buy anything, but if you do want to buy something, use one of our ads and click through and buy it there. Thank you for understanding. And next time, who knows?
No idea.
We never know.
We didn't know. We just found out a couple of days ago that we were going to be interviewing Russ.
Yeah, exactly. So
these things just happen.
It just happens. Okay, that should do it for this episode of TG Geeks Webcast. Be sure to check out the article for this webcast episode. We've got several links on the page. And remember, you can come in on our Facebook page or our website, tggeeks.com, or you can leave us a voicemail at 469-TGGEEKS. That is 469-844-3357 from TG Squared Studios. I am Keith Lane. Thanks for listening. I bid you peace.
Cheers.